Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 39, being recorded on the 13th of August, 2014, with special guest Mike McEwen, who is an Azure MVP and also a Principal Cloud Solutions Architect with ADT Technologies. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a Senior Consultant with Microsoft in the App Dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my two esteemed colleagues, Kale and Evan, and our special guest, Mike. Guys, please introduce yourselves.
Yeah, this is Kale Teeter. I'm an MCS consultant from the New York region as well, and I focus mostly on .NET development and Azure development.
And my name is Evan Basilik, and I'm a support escalation engineer on the Windows on Azure team, focusing on Azure IaaS. And then I actually am the one that sucked Mike into this. So, Mike, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hey, thanks. What a great opportunity to be in this show, by the way. It's one of my favorite podcasts, guys. I'm Mike McEwen. I'm a Principal Cloud Solutions Architect with ADT. I spent almost two decades with Microsoft. I currently work in the IaaS space. I'm also doing PaaS as well, but mostly IaaS is my function. Azure MVP, I got a blog going on. I like to just eat, sleep, and drink the cloud pretty much.
Cool, great. Thanks for coming, Mike.
I'd like to ask Mike just a quick question to get started. Mike, this Azure MVP, what does that entail? Like, how did you get into that role?
Yeah, so the Azure MVP is, if I believe what I've heard, there's only about 100 or so people in the world that are actually Azure MVPs. It's actually a finite set of people that come in and out of it each year. It's something you have to renew each year. It's based upon community work and involvement supporting Microsoft. It's also involved with, you know, your blogs and things you do. Like I also am a Pluralsight course author. So I author courses for Pluralsight, and it's based upon Azure. So they take it all into consideration and they say, you know, you're nominated by somebody and they say, hey, you're an MVP. And so, in doing that, you support a lot of community events like Evan, myself, and Jeff Knuckles, who did that tremendous podcast with you guys a couple weeks ago in Internet of Things, are doing a conference in a couple weeks in Charlotte, Charlotte Azure Bootcamp. And by the way, Evan, we have almost 100 people signed up for that. We're doing really great.
Yeah, I saw that. That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I heard about that. Best of luck on the conference, guys. Anything more you want to add about it?
I was just going to say, Sujit, if you and Kale really supported us, you'd show up, but, you know. it should be a great time. I'm actually trying to, one of the other things that we're going to do, Mike and I have been talking about, and I think we are going to do it. I got to corral some of my colleagues, is we're actually going to have a table at the conference where we've got some of the folks from my support team here in Charlotte. We're actually going to man a table during the day. So if somebody wants to walk up and ask us, you know, us Azure support, you know, a question about Azure, we're there. But on top of that, because, you know, Mike and all the other speakers are definitely super knowledgeable on this stuff, but one of the things we can do is we can actually do some live troubleshooting if customers want to.
Wow.
That'd right. Cool. We'll have full access to our back-end data. We can, you know, we can't really show you guys what we're looking at, but, you know, we can go in and we might even potentially be able to resolve some things for some people. So if you're coming, bring your hearing capabilities, but also bring your problems and we can see what we can kind of address real time.
Neat.
Yeah, let's start real simple. So, you know, I mean, Mike, you know, you and I've talked before kind of about how you manage IaaS, right? And PowerShell is the thing. Why don't you, can you kind of talk to us about how you see customers out in the real world actually doing this?
Yeah, so that's one of the great things of leaving Microsoft and going into the real world is I really got to get into the jungles and see what really bites you and what really keeps you up at night. And one of the things, the common things that people deal with is automating their processes and automating their deployments. I was really excited. I mean, we've had so much introduced since the WPC and since TechEd and, you know, Build. Just been so much stuff that's been rolled out in Azure. And this Azure automation is not one of the most flashy things, but I can tell you what, a lot of customers are very excited about it. And a couple of reasons why. Customers really want to automate. They want to try to eliminate human errors. They want to be able to get the same reproduced results every time. be able to automate their processing and any kind of configuration like monitoring, deployment, etc. And they want to be able to deploy their and manage their installations in a predictable and a controlled way. So Azure Automation is something that helps with that. And I'm going to tell you, share with you today some of my experience in the different levels of Azure Automation, what I found, or automation, I should say, what I found the customers using and some of the solutions out there to help people right now. But some companies, they don't have the PowerShell expertise and they can't write scripts and they don't have an enterprise library. So they're, you know, but they want to do these repetitive tasks. They want to build up a library, but they're like, well, how do we do this? And we don't want to pay all this money to have this done. So, you know, there's also dependencies of orders of installation that bug customers. Like, for instance, if you set up a SQL Server always on cluster, you know, there's certain things that have to be deployed before the others. And that's another thing customers deal with. And they want to put, they want to create these templates if possible and just parameterize these templates, submit them to some engine that handles it for them and take care of it. Like, I'm sure you guys, I've heard you talk about Amazon a couple times on this talk. They have the Elastic Beans.
We don't. We don't.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't use the A word and we don't use the G word on this podcast.
Now, I've heard you guys say it. I know I have. But they have a solution like CloudFormation and Elastic Beanstalk. And that's one of the big things that people have talked about a lot is, does Azure have a solution in that area? And that's what this Azure Automation is, the first step in the way. And something called the Resource Manager, which is coming out as well, is a step in that direction.
So Mike, one of the things that I see as a support engineer, right? We kind of live and breathe in PowerShell with Azure, but my PowerShell stuff is almost always, you know, a couple three commands trying to reproduce a behavior or, you know, I mean, I do bigger PowerShell stuff, but it's generally a very, very small focused activity. One of the pieces of feedback that we've heard from customers regularly is most of the customers we talk to, I find that they don't use PowerShell, right? Do you find that there's like, I mean, like, do the customers end up breaking themselves into like buckets of customers, or do you see it's really just a comfort level with Azure? Or, you know, like, how do you actually see that?
Well, I've actually, I'm working with, I can tell you probably two customers right now that do have PowerShell expertise and staff, and we have leveraged that and used it as part of our deployment plan. There are other couple companies that don't have PowerShell expertise. So, for instance, they're saying, well, how do we solve this if we don't have the PowerShell expertise? We don't want to pay for this. It's too much work. We don't want to maintain it. So there are other options. And one of those options that we recommend to them is a product that Aditi has now called Brewmaster. And Brewmaster is basically user interface type thing. Where you actually can, it's a SaaS offering basically, and it allows users to deploy IaaS, not PaaS, but IaaS VM topologies. And it does popular workloads like SQL Server Always On, SharePoint, web forms, things like that. So standard things you can provide. And it's very simple. It's a UI. It's point and click. You basically have these JSON templates, and they describe the Azure resources and allow you to deploy them in a consistent and repeatable manner. So these templates, you can have templates where you write your own custom templates if you want to modify them or just use the ones they have. And they're hosted in GitHub or Bitbucket. You know, you can fork them, you can version them, you can customize for users. And they integrate with the desired state configuration or DSC, and they allow you to develop this VM configurations. It's a very simple way for people to do this. They don't have to mess with PowerShell. PowerShell's not even involved in this. It's actually JSON that under the covers that promotes DSC on the VMs that are being provisioned and does its magic there. But it's a very simple process to go through, and it's very powerful. I can tell you, because I don't know if you guys have done this before, but I tried to set up a SQL Server Always On availability group one time manually.
Yeah.
And it took me a whole day, and I'd screwed something up, and I had to go back and do it, and it took me another three quarters another day. With Brewmaster, I just go in, I download the template, I put a few parameters in 5 minutes, and bang, in 30 minutes, I got a fully functional SQL Server Always On availability group with a quorum server clustered and everything I need, and it's extremely powerful. So a lot of people are liking that, and it's actually a product that we release, and people are actually using that quite a bit. It's a free product, by the way. It doesn't cost anything to use it.
What's a free product?
It's called Brewmaster.
Brewmaster is free? I thought you said it was a SaaS solution, but it's a free SaaS solution?
It is, actually, yep. And, wow. And it was created by Wade Wagner and Ryan Dunn, who are two – well, Wade is not with us anymore, but Ryan is with us. He's the head of development. And it was made because those guys are brewmasters. They brew when they're part-time, so they gave it the name Brewmaster, and it was meant to kind of a niche in the market to be able to help people who didn't have the PowerShell expertise to do that.
And
the, oh, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to ask, is Brewmaster itself hosted on Azure?
It is, actually.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. That's a, you were trying to suck him into that.
I know.
That raises an interesting question for me because, I mean, I totally agree with you on, you know, setting up an always-on cluster. I don't care whether you're doing it in Azure or you're doing it on-premises, is not for the faint of heart,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, even doing a cluster, much less adding on always-on on top, is not for the faint of heart generally. So it sounds like you're actually seeing people leverage that for even for their one-off deployments, as compared to when you were first describing it, and when I typically think about those solutions, I think like dev test scenarios where I'm really throwing it out there, doing my stuff, and then I rip it down. But it sounds like people could actually do this for even, hey, I'm standing up my environment. I know I'm going to do this once, but I want to make sure I don't screw it up as I'm doing it.
Yes, we actually had a customer we're working with who wanted to create a custom SQL Server install because of the licensing issues. So we had to go in and modify the JSON. We uploaded it back to Brewmaster. Brewmaster ran it, and it was actually a pretty good project we worked on. The other thing I found is that a lot of people are really digging this Azure automation, and they're asking a lot of questions about it, especially the folks in the IaaS community. Because Azure automation gives you some benefits that you don't see with PowerShell on-premises. For instance, you can set up a way to run your Azure automation scripts. They're actually PowerShell workflows. You can specify the region for them to run in. Today it's only the East because it's in preview. But you can specify a region which will be where your resources are being deployed. And there's a lot of advantages to that. There's also a lot of community scripts that Microsoft has in their TechNet and MSDN Script Center that you can download to do a lot of the functionality that is standard in the IaaS world.
Yeah, this is Cal. I just wanted to comment on that. Something I'd worked on with some of the team out in Redmond is this thing called Script Browser. And what that is, I don't know if everybody's familiar with it, but inside the PowerShell ISE, you can download a separate component called Script Browser. I think you can run it standalone as well, but it kind of plugs into the ISE. And then you can search for terms. Like if you search for Azure, right now there's 103 scripts in there. So it's community supported, little snippets of, you know, how do I set up a virtual network in IaaS? Boom, right there you go. And you can just copy paste right over into it. So for, you know, the onesie twosie things, I don't know if there's any full fledged, you know, build the whole environment for me, but it's all these little small things. If you just need a script to do it, it's kind of nice.
Yeah. So Kale, what you're saying is, that's definitely a great thing with the Script Center and the stuff that's out there. So with the Brewmaster, and I was going to talk about the Azure Resource Manager, which is another option people now have. You know, you can set up these things called, in the resource manager, set up these things called groups. And you basically, you visualize a group of resources, they're a logical group of resources, and you can be able to repeatedly deploy them and monitor them as a group, like things like health and billing of the group, et cetera. And you combine some of these entities in what are called resource groups, units of common lifecycle management, for instance, or like, you know, deployment status, et cetera. It's something that's done. It's done strictly through PowerShell right now. There's no UI in the Azure portal yet, but it's a powerful way of being able to go in and take these templates, specify these templates, and deploy them to a region. So it's, you know, with Azure Resource Manager and with Brewmaster, there are options that people have where they don't have to be PowerShell gurus or invest a lot of money in building up a PowerShell repository, because a lot of people do that. Just because that's how they've always done things in the past. And Evan, I'm sure you've seen it. You know, one of the struggles you have, well, like I used to be in solution integration engineering. Remember SIE, that old team?
Yep.
Yeah, and so the folks in that group, you know, we see a lot of these things that customers have. And one of the things that customers struggle with quite regularly with this Azure automation is, you know, I want to do things with the cloud. I want to do things the way I did it before. You know, don't tell me I have to do things slightly differently. I want to do it just like I did it before. And so a lot of that mindset, you know, of having everything componentized and scripted, and, you know, there's a lot of dependencies and things that the cloud brings into it with affinity groups and virtual networks and things that's very hard to manage, just by doing it with abstract scripting. I found that things like Resource Manager, Brewmaster tremendously, tremendously simplify this process.
I just wanted to interject one thing here. When you mentioned resource groups, just a hot off the wire and update is that Visual Studio 2013 now has something called the Resource Manager tool. It's a new user interface for creating your own resource groups. So it enables developers to create reusable deployment templates, which are the JSON files you talked about, and things like that. I just want to mention that there is a UI for it now.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, Sajid, because the new preview portal, right? At some point we'll have a real name for it, but we'll still call it the preview portal. I was talking to some of the devs that are working on that, and the entire preview portal is built on top of these resource managers now. Mm-hmm. Right? So we've completely re-architected, and what we've basically done is, and this is kind of something we do classically at Microsoft, right? We have this service layer underneath these APIs, and then now we're layering a Visual Studio UI on it. We're layering PowerShell UI, and then we're laying the portal UI on it, right? So now it's going to be a consistent experience no matter what you do, and you can kind of play in whatever environment you're comfortable.
All right, well, I'm going to put Mike on the spot and ask him a question here, which is, Mike, what do you think about the new portal, the preview portal, compared to the old one?
You know, I think from a past standpoint, it's pretty cool. I've played around with it a little bit. I haven't had enough time to work with it like I could have because I've been focused on the IIS stuff lately. But I have actually gone and looked at it. And I especially like the there was some demos they had at TechEd of monitoring the applications and the things they were doing while applications were running. And I was really pretty impressed with it. The old portal is kind of needed to be brushed up. You know, when customers had some issues with that as far as the simplicity and being able to go from screen to screen and some of the things. And I really like the multi-document interface, per se, as you look at it in the new portal. So I think it's going to be very successful.
Yeah, so Jeet and Kale, because I know you guys write code as well. I don't know that I could even begin to imagine how to code that, the new portal.
That's, it's really, really advanced. There's no doubt about it. The only reason I asked Mike the question because the one frustration I have with it actually is that not everything's being migrated to the new portal. There's parts of it there. And, I'll spend like 5 minutes looking for something in the new portal and you realize it's not there. I have to go to the old portal to look at it.
Do you remember, Steve, how long it took for some of the things to finally come out of the Silverlight portal?
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, we're on, it's, that's kind of, I think it's great that we kind of keep them both up at one time and it's not this like massive reveal of everything because you can kind of start seeing where it's going and we can get the feedback loop. But yeah, the point you raise is huge because even I'd be lying if I said I knew off the top of my head every feature that's been migrated.
Yeah.
Right. So it's hard to keep up with.
Yeah, I was actually teaching a class one time on Traffic Manager, one of the issues I was talking about, and I was trying to get it from the Silverlight portal and going between Silverlight portal and the new portal, and I had some real complications with that. Some stuff had been migrated that I didn't realize had been migrated, and it was causing me some problems. So I can feel you in that one, Evan. That's definitely an issue. Yep.
Right, yeah, for me, the new portal, I think the biggest thing I like about it is the way that you can really build a view the way you like it.
Yeah.
Like that's something we couldn't do before. Now you can build a freaking, UI there and say, this is what's important to me. That when I come in here, I want to see this, So I think that's cool.
You mean the journeys? Is that what you're talking about?
Not even the journeys, but how it's kind of like the Windows 8 paradigm with the tiles, right? So you can pin tiles over there and you can change the size of them.
Yeah.
You can position them the way you like your user interface to look.
I like the way it comes back right up where you left off, even if you close the browser and log in again, which is nice.
I get a kick out when you first go into it, though. It's like when you go, if anybody goes to portal.azure.com, it's like Azure is starting up.
Starting up.
Like, so it was sleeping, now we woke it up. Like,
it's booting or something.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Anyway, sorry for that segue. Back on track here. So do you spend any time on Brewmaster, Mike? I mean, working on it or writing some of the scripts for it, or are you primarily a user?
No, I'm a user. It's we have a development team with Ryan Dunn being the head of that team, and some folks offshore and some folks in the U.S. that are working on it. But I actually, you know, we use it as a recommended tool for some of the engagements we're on. It's saved us a lot of time and a lot of effort. It's actually a pretty good tool.
No, I was going to say, since you mentioned time, like, you know, how long does it take to do like a deployment? Say like a SQL Server always on cluster. How long would it take to deploy using Brewmaster?
The actual deployment, a lot of it's done in parallel, so it probably take about 45 minutes to deploy it, 30 to 45 minutes approximately, depending on how many servers you have. But it takes you about 5 minutes to configure it. So you have to you have to have a GitHub or Bitbucket account, and then you download the template if you want to modify it. You go from there, and it load every time it runs. It goes up to GitHub and checks the template if it's been uploaded, if you changed it or not, so you can customize it, and it loads a template and it takes the parameters, and you put some parameters in the UI that you enter when you run Brewmaster. There's some parameters you enter, and it's similar to when you run an Azure automation script today. If you run like a workbook and it has four or five parameters, there's a screen that comes up and asks you, enter your VM name or your, connection object, whatever. It's the same thing with Brewmaster. You enter those parameters, and it goes ahead and just works. It's magic. And it's got pretty good logging capabilities, and Medidi does a really good job supporting it, actually, when problems happen. They're very quick to help with that. So it's a very nice tool.
Great. Do you guys have any metrics on how many people use the tool?
You know, I wouldn't have access to that right now. If Ryan Dunn was on, I'm sure he could tell you. But I know we have a decent amount of our customers are actually using it now. And you know what? They were first kind of standoffish, like, well, we don't want to get tied into this third-party tool. Because, one of the things people want to get into is vendor lock-in. So, but when they understand it's just JSON and, there's no tricky stuff behind the scenes, they're like, okay, we can manage this ourselves. So it's not hard to, if you have to customize or work with it, and it's not hard to use.
That's great. Thanks.
So you're welcome.
So
yeah, I actually made a note to myself. I'm going to have to go check it out because it sounds like there's some scenarios where I'm trying to spin up something where it might be a lot faster to do it that way than the way that I do it now.
There's some videos on Channel 9 and on YouTube. I think Ryan Dunn did a couple cloud covers, I think, with that as well, talking about that's pretty – and I think Wade Wagner did one too. So, yeah.
Cool.
But – I guess the whole summarize this discussion, I guess what I could say is that I've seen a lot of the customers now, wanting to find solutions for the automation. They want to find ways that fit in with their skill set, with their budget, with their way of doing things. Like I said, some people are hands-on, touchy-feely, write the code, low level. Some people like, just give me some UI, let me click some buttons and send it off and do its magic. So, we discussed four options today. We talked about, bare bones PowerShell. We talked about Brewmaster. We talked about Resource Manager. And we talked about Azure Automation. So there's a lot of options out there for people now who, all different levels and all different flavors of people want to get involved into the automation. But the bottom line is, automate this stuff and put Evan out of business. That's the end result.
I think the one other important point, Sajid, we need to is drop the URL in the link dump here in the podcast. This way people can find it. I'm pretty sure if you type Adidi Brewmaster in Bing, you'll find it. But let's make sure we include the URL.
Sounds good. Yep. So Mike, let's ask you a question we asked Jeff a couple of weeks ago. What are customers, like when you talk to customers as, in your role as the cloud architect, what are some of the scenarios that you're looking at these days? What are customers looking at when it comes to the cloud?
Well, I see a lot of dev test scenarios, and I see that coming out very commonly now because of the ability to spin up things quickly, to use them and shut them down. So I've been working with a couple of customers on that actually. Customers are actually really starting to embrace that. Especially with the fact that, VNets go across regions now. Large companies really kind of excited about that. I've seen people really grabbing onto that. Predominantly the type of engagements I see with customers are high availability disaster recovery. I had written a white paper last year on MSDN, I think June of last year, and I've really seen a lot of people trying to find the cloud for solutions to, you know, global deployment and global disaster recovery. For instance, you know, I'm this company and I'm a small company. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a lot of clout. I don't have a lot of servers. I'm basically, you know, in Boston or wherever. I'm in this local area. And, you know, if somebody crashes into the flight tower at Logan International Airport, you know, what happens? I mean, you know, all the electricity goes out and we're in trouble. So, you know, a lot of people are looking to find solutions outside of a single data center. For instance, you guys know this, but, you know, Azure, a lot of the functionality gives us an HADR in availability, especially is done in one data center. And if that data center goes down, you know, everybody is pretty much toast unless they have a multi-data center solution. So multi-data center has been a big thing I've seen people pushing. The other thing is obviously certain workloads, things with scalability. And especially as Jeff mentioned, the Internet of Things and with Hadoop and big data, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of murmur, a lot of talking going around about how can we, you know, use this tremendous resource that we can spin up and do these calculations and then shut it back down again, you know, and to generate, you know, data that helps us do our business better, or, you know, smart, intelligent machines that are able to, you know, take large processing amounts of data. Like I'm working with one company, for instance, that has software that monitors these trains, and it gives them information on, you know, the pitch of the wheel and the resistance on the wheel and the weather it's going into and all this stuff, as well as another example where they have these windmills that are being, you know, the pitch of the windmills adjusted by the weather, the humidity, what's going on with the wind. And both of those things are intelligent machines. They process this intelligently, and then they send it back as commands to these entities to help adjust the pitch of the windmill, or to maybe adjust the speed of the train, to be more fuel efficient. And I've also seen in the same company they're doing some work where they're doing predictive modeling for, like, maintenance, for instance. You know, for instance, if I have something like a machine that is about to go, I know when that part's going to go because I've been able to get this data and monitor it and keep track of what's going on and do something with this data and give commands back to this thing and make it work. So I've seen a lot of that going on as well. And I think that's going to be an area, especially like the LM we have now and the intelligent systems. I think that's an area that really going to see take off in the next year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're all excited about machine learning. That should be cool. Great. Yeah, that's so. You guys, you have any questions for Mike before we wrap up?
That was great, Mike. I mean, it is really good to hear, you know, kind of what you guys are actually seeing on the ground, right? And I'm actually really excited to hear about things that work. Everything everybody ever talks to me is things that are broken. So,
yeah, I have teenage kids, so I know what you're saying. The only time they come to me is when they need me to sign something,
yeah,
pay something, or to drive them somewhere because the car is broken down. So,
yep.
I don't hear when things work.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mike, for coming on. I really appreciate
it.
This was awesome.
You going to say something?
No, no, I'm very appreciative of you guys giving Jeff and I the chance to talk and to share with you guys, because I really enjoy your podcast, and I have been blogging, and I will be blogging about your podcast and pushing Jeff and myself out there, because a lot of people who follow us should know about this podcast. It's a great podcast. I mean, it's really concise and to the point, and it's a very good place for people to learn a lot of things. And you guys know there's so much stuff coming out, you can't keep up with it. So on the treadmill, driving to work, ask your podcast, fire it up and go.
Yeah, we'll be sure to put your blog on our links as well, so people can track it down.
Yep. Hey, Kale, you know, we normally try to keep our listeners up to date with some updates in Azure. I believe you have something management API.
Yeah. So last week we had a little bit of talk about the API management features in Azure, and actually just this week we saw some updates. We could post a link in the blog. It was actually dated on the 6th that this stuff was put out there, but a couple things. One was the API management REST API has been released. It's not GA yet, and so they're taking feedback, and things may change slightly, but if you're interested in doing some automation on top of the API management directly with REST API that's available. There's also some delegation features that have come about now with the API portal. So before, you had to take advantage of the stuff that was in the portal in order to allow people to sign in, sign up, and the subscriptions. And now you can actually delegate that out to a website of your choice. So if you have your own branded thing that you want to use to have people onboarded and log in, you can do that. On top of that, there were some bug fixes that came along with it. There's some speed improvements and some template matching. So we'll put the link to the blog out there for anybody that's interested, but I just wanted to kind of update because we just talked about that recently.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Thanks, Gil.
Thanks, yeah. And I got to be careful how I say these things, because I said management API, which is different from API management. Yeah, but they're both valid in Azure. That's the funny part about it.
Yeah.
it's the little things. Well, Mike, thanks again for all your time today, and best of luck with the conference, guys. And, of course, Cale and Evan, thank you so much for joining in, and for Evan for bringing in Mike and Jeff into the podcast.
Anytime.
All right. Yes, sir. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Take
Thanks,
care.
Guys.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.